Good afternoon. As you probably know, since the July suicide bomb attacks on the London Underground, the UK government has, not surprisingly, been preoccupied with the issue of how to prevent any further attacks of this nature. So, in the wake of these July the 7th bombings and then the second round of failed attacks, which happened a week later, the Home Secretary, Charles Clarke, has come up with a range of quite stringent measures as part of a new anti-terror bill. Now, a number of these measures have been strongly criticised by civil liberties groups, and there is a debate now raging in the UK, and you may have read something about it if you've seen the British papers recently. And the debate concerns the extent to which, in a democratic society, it is acceptable to compromise on fundamental freedoms in order to defend that society against a perceived terrorist threat. Now, in my speech today, I'd like to concentrate on one particular aspect of this proposed legislation, which has been the subject of huge controversy, and that is the creation of a new criminal offence known as incitement to terrorism. Now, at first sight, this might seem perfectly reasonable because, after all, if a terrorist act is illegal, then surely inciting someone to commit a terrorist act should also be against the law. But if we examine the situation in greater detail, it actually becomes a little bit less clear than that. Now, the main aim of this new offence is to target extremist Islamic militant groups who, either through preaching in the mosques in the UK or through internet sites, are allegedly inciting disaffected Muslim youth in the UK to commit acts of violence. Now, most people in the UK do agree that this is an issue that's been neglected for far too long. The government has been somewhat reluctant to interfere, for example, in the way mosques in British cities are run. They've left that to the members of the Islamic faith themselves to sort it out. But now the situation really needs addressing. Most people agree that something has to be done. But the problem with this new offence, this offence of incitement to terrorism, is how it's actually going to be defined in the law and how it will be able to be applied and enforced without actually undermining freedom of speech, particularly given the way the draft legislation is framed at the moment, and drafts have now been published, so we do know exactly what is being proposed. So, if we look at the draft bill that is up for discussion, we can see that Charles Clarke plans to lock up to 5 years anyone who glorifies or celebrates a terrorist act committed in the past 20 years. Now, one very worrying aspect of the way the definition is written is that the terms potential and indirect are included. So, what this means is that you don't have to deliberately incite someone to commit a criminal act. There doesn't have to be any intention on your part to do so. But if someone somewhere just happens to take anything I say as incitement, as encouragement to commit terrorism, if they interpret it in that way, then I have committed an offence. And the word potential is also used, so that takes it even further and means that the person only has to have seen it as encouragement to commit an offence. They don't actually have to have committed the offence. So it all becomes terribly vague and leaves a lot of room for clamping down on people purely for expressing an opinion. Another problem with the way this legislation is designed is that it talks about a terrorist act committed in the past 20 years. Now, that seems a bit arbitrary as a cut-off point anyway. Why 20 years? Why not 30? Why not 15? But in any case, it doesn't mean that a terrorist act that was committed before that can be celebrated with impunity. What the government is going to do is draw up a list of events that have happened in the past, which it's okay to talk about, and a list of those that it's not okay to talk about. So the Ministry of the Interior, the Home Office, is going to go through history, look at acts of violence or terrorist acts from the past, and decide which ones can be mentioned and which ones can't be mentioned under this new law. So it seems to me that it's a bit of a minefield, really, and it's hard not to see the whole thing as an outrageous act of political censorship. The government is deciding what people can and can't say. We'd better swap. I think I'm halfway through, if not more. Now, we might look at some historical events in the context of this new law and see how they might be considered. For example, during World War II, Churchill ordered bombing raids on a number of German cities. Whole German cities were flattened, and Churchill actually said outright that this was simply done for the sake of increasing terror among the German population. But presumably the government isn't going to ban talking about the Second World War bombings. And what about Hiroshima? That was a fairly terror-inspiring act. So is that going to be something which is on the blacklist or not? The government is going to decide. The government's already avoided one potential problem by deciding that no Irish events will be on the blacklist. So both sides in the Irish conflict will be free to continue to celebrate their various victories in the past without any fear of being prosecuted. Now, some people suggest that ministers themselves might live to regret this new law if it does make it to the statute book, if it is approved. Because once a law has been passed, the Crown Prosecution Service in the UK, the chief prosecutor, has to apply the law impartially and without any political interference from the government. And that's a basic principle, of course, of the independence of the judiciary in our democratic system. So, although I personally might feel that there's a moral distinction between what President Bush and Prime Minister Tony Blair are doing in the war in Iraq and Al-Qaeda's violence against the West, I might feel there's a moral distinction. But both of these involve terror, inspiring terror, and both involve killing innocent people. So although I might feel that my war is a good cause and therefore can be defended, and Al-Qaeda's is an evil one and is not, purely by the letter of the law, how can one distinguish? Being in a good cause isn't mentioned anywhere as a possible defence under this new law. And another interesting issue would be what the government would do, for example, about the Prime Minister's wife, Sherry Blair, who has on a number of occasions said that given the situation in Palestine and the Israeli occupation, she can quite well understand how young Palestinians can be pushed to commit terrorist acts. So perhaps Tony Blair is going to prosecute his wife under the new law because she has been inciting terrorism. So, to conclude, we might have sympathy with the aim of this new legislation, and we might agree that there is an urgent need to tackle the issue of radicalisation of Muslim youth in Great Britain. But this type of law, which is going to be applied based on political criteria set by the government, doesn't appear to be a very sensible solution. An unworkable law is worse than useless. You might as well have no law at all. And there's already concern as well that this new law will alienate moderate Muslims in the United Kingdom. And it's these very moderate Muslims that the government actually needs to have on their side in order to address the issue of radicalisation in the mosques. There are, after all, many Muslims in the UK who might sympathise with some of the causes espoused by the radical groups without actually condoning their violent solutions. So I think that threatening the freedom of speech of anyone who might defend any cause for which someone somewhere in the world might be prepared theoretically to fight is a very dangerous way of defending what Mr. Bush and Mr. Blair like to refer to as our democratic civilization. Thank you.